Any further ado, Tom W. from Oakland.
Hi there, I'm Tom and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Tom.
Being that I got here last week, I was convinced I could find it this week, right? There is a lesson here somewhere. And I got to the Hayward border, and it occurred to me that I didn't get to the Hayward border last week. So I knew it was wrong somehow. And then I said, well, is it Mission High, Mission San Jose High, or the other place? What's the other place? And I just felt panic. And then I said, well, this will all work out. schools usually don't move dramatically, you know, so... And I was looking for Path Street, which is pretty close to whatever it is out there, so I guess that all works. Oh, my. I guess the moral of the story is just because you've been that way once doesn't mean you can find it again. And I think that's the story of my life. I've tried something, I've tried it once, I've gone through it sober now, I should be able to handle this just well. And I try it the second time sober and it's a disaster. It just blows up and feels awful. And I say, haven't you been before? No, I really haven't. Sober is very new and different, and there is a tremendous feeling of awkwardness in sobriety, and I wish it would go away. It does, but it keeps coming back. And I just all of a sudden say, I think I'm figuring it all out. I've read enough books, and I've taken the courses, and I've listened enough to crazy people, and I know everything that's wrong with them, and I'm convinced now that I have the answer. And then everything goes out of focus. And nothing fits. And what used to be the answer no longer is the answer. And it's very uncomfortable. I spent yesterday looking through some things. I read, people give me lots of things to read, and I have a stack of things to read that high. And I got two more of them today, I want you to know. One, a book with 400 pages. I was very glad to get it. I just can't get around to them right away. But anyway, someone gave me a series of talks that someone else gave. Now, let's talk about arrogance. Why would I want to read someone else's talk, you know? Send them a tape. But it was in a moment of weakness, I said, well, I might learn something new, you see, which is always scary. Soon as you say that, it might happen. And I got this, and I was walking up and down reading. It was about 30 pages of different talks, and it was very interesting topics. The first topic was enthusiasm and cynicism and God and grace and relationships. It was a wonderful thing, and this is a guy, he's very bright and thinks just off-center a little. So he approaches very familiar topics from a different angle, and I started writing things down he said, and people he was quoting. And one of the things he quoted was an old prayer written in the 10th, 11th, or 12th century in Latin, and it was a prayer to the Spirit, the Divine Spirit. And it was a prayer for the Spirit to enter our lives. But the way it was phrased, it said, Divine Spirit, we ask you to enter our lives, rattle our cages. That's the first part of it. It just, you know, because we get complacent and fall asleep and everything's fine. Wake up, Pop! rattle our cages. Break into our homes, you know, where we have bricked up everything and pulled down the shutters and waiting there with a rifle, you know. God's not going to find me. Break into the homes. Water our parched land, you know, which I... You're just empty and parched. Water this. Break it. Rattle the cages. Stir us up. Make us change our ways which are just dead and give us tremendous life and joy. And that's out of the 10th century. And I liked it. And I wrote it down. And he quoted a dusty old 2nd or 3rd century theologian, a man by the name of Origen, who was, like, original doesn't come from him, but he wrote a zillion things. And he was trying to talk about God, and this is what he said about God in the 2nd century. He said, can I find this? I couldn't find it earlier this afternoon. I was trying to impress my sponsor. Couldn't find it. Where are you? It says, God takes away the deadness in us. That's what God does. If you want to know who God is, God takes away that which is dead in us, the deadness, the heavy, the oppressed, God takes that away. This was the 2nd century. I thought Bill W. said that. And then here is, I did write down the whole prayer. Here's how it goes. Find the right page, Tom. It says, come, Divine Spirit, we pray, rattle our cages, break into our locked houses, water our parched land, undo our bends and twistedness. Awaken our hearts. Help us to overflow with kindness and give us unending joy. I'd put that one right up there with the Serenity Prayer. I figure, yeah. But the problem with praying these things is they might happen. See? And I get very complacent, and I get, like I say, I get it all figured out, and it's sorted, it's clear. It's like I have built this whole house of cards now. I went to a meeting at the Berkeley Fellowship at noon today and figured it all out there, analyzed everyone in the room, made it fine. And I have this elaborate house of cards, and God comes along and blows it all down. And I find myself 10 years sober at step one. I say, this is unfair. Well, it's not. Fairness has nothing to do with it. This is called being alive. You know? And we all get to go back to step one. Tonight, I want to talk some about amends. And then a little bit about other stuff. But the amends business is a little complicated. And the book talks about lots of things. There are 8 pages on amends in the book. 8 pages. I think there are more on this step than any other step, although I may be wrong on that. The reason is because when we're making, see, a certain steps 1, 2, and 3, you don't have to tell anybody you're doing. You can just do them in your head, I guess. I mean, in your room alone. 1, 2, 3. With 4, at least you're involved with pencil and paper. So if someone, snoops around, they'll find you. Okay. Oh, you're doing a 4 step. With 5, you are finally involving another human being. My sponsor, as a matter of fact, 6 months after I did my 5th step with him, he said, he's a little slow. He said, by the way, about your 5th step, and I just cringed waiting for this awful diagnosis. He said, do you know you... No, but he said, I just want to tell you that it seems you're working the program. And if you keep working the program, you'll never have to drink again. Hooray for you. With a 5th step, you involve someone else in the process of getting well. I think that is one reason why the 5th step is so hard for some of us, because we'd really rather do this by ourselves.
If only I could admit to God, myself, and the mirror the exact nature of my wrongs.
But I have to do it with another human being. All right. The amends step. It's very important to involve another human being in the amends steps. Why? The rule of thumb is this. Most of us are lousy judges of our own situation. That's why. We can be wonderful with other people. Insightful, bright, charming, witty, and accurate. With ourselves, we misfire. We either let ourselves off the hook, like, oh, well, you know, it wasn't that serious. Or we're merciless to ourselves. And we just grind it and grind it and grind it, confusing honesty with masochism. Okay. So it's real hard to judge. So this is why, especially with amends dealing with other people, we need someone to talk to. To say, all right, here's the situation. Now, should you ritually burn your fifth step soon as you get it done? Well, if you want to. But it's helpful if you use that to make amends out of, too. If you burn your fourth step, you're going to have to write up some kind of other list when you get to amends. If you keep it around at least for the amends times, you can pick some stuff off of there, very, very simply. And say, all right, in my resentment list, do I owe any of these people amends? Some maybe yes, some maybe no. What about fears? What about sexual stuff? What about finances? Do I owe amends or not? And to the best of your ability, check that out. And then go check that out with someone else. The way the book reads, it says this step has two parts to it. The first part says, made a list of all persons we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. That might take some people years to become willing to do anything. Because we get complacent. I'm fine. I'm not in pain. I don't have to make amends to wife number three. I sleep just fine. The cage gets rattled, and the spirit breaks into the locked house, and all of a sudden you're not sleeping so well, and you have to make amends to wife three, you see. And then the next one, made direct amends to such people wherever possible, except when to do so would injure them or others. So it's the list, which is based on 4 and 5. The list is about defects of character, about people who've gotten in our way. Examples. What if, on your fourth step, one of the items was adultery? You're a married person, and you have stepped out on your mate on a variety of occasions. Not only that, you stepped out, you know, I'm a man, and I've been married now to Sally for 15 years, and during my drinking time, I was having an affair with her sister or brother. Okay, now, as I begin making amends, should I tell Sally? By the way, Sally, I've been sleeping with your sister now for 5 years. I don't think that's a good idea. It says, except when to do so would injure. I think that would injure. Well, I'm just trying to be honest. No, you're not. You want to declare World War III. Something like that, I mean, this may sound really callous, but this is not your wife's business. It's not your husband's business. Unless you really want to create vast amounts of chaos, and you've already done that to get here. Okay, so, what if this is the situation? What if, one of your parents is still alive, you had an awful time with your parent, and you've just felt awful about your parent for years, and you've hated them, but you've nevertheless followed the rules and regulations and carried through the courtesies. Should you go and tell your mom, Mom, I've hated you now for 53 years, and I want to get over it? I don't think so. I don't think she needs to hear that. You see, I don't think that's making amends. Again, I think that's declaring war. That's just another way of being angry in the name of the program, you see. But anger has a way of sneaking in there. How's this? What if you worked in a gas station, you're 17 years old, and for the past couple of years, you have been skimming off the top. A couple of dollars here, a couple of dollars there. A couple of dollars a day for a couple of years. Okay. Well, the first thing in the fourth set, how much have you taken? How much have you taken?
Well, I don't know. Probably $5 a day for 10 years.
Multiply.
All right, I guess about $5,000.
Well, for a 17-year-old kid, that's a lot of money. By the way, for a 41-year-old male, it's a lot of money, too, just between the several of us. What are you going to do? Do you go up to your boss and say, here is the $5,000 I've stolen from you, $5 at a time over 4 years? You can get fired. See? I don't think the program asks us to do that. But it does ask us to make amends. Now, that particular case, I sponsored a lad. He was at the school I was teaching, and that was his situation. And he knew if he was going to stay sober, he would have to pay this guy back. But the guy didn't even know it was gone.
But doesn't this let me off the hook?
Not really. You know it's gone. So what we decided on making amends was he got paid every 2 weeks, and when he got paid, he would take $10 out of the payment immediately. First of all, he stopped taking more money. All right, that's stop taking money. Then as soon as he got his paycheck, he'd cash it, he'd get a crisp $10 bill, put it in, wrap paper around it, put it in an envelope, have someone else write, or he just typed so it wasn't his handwriting, type the guy's name and address, put a stamp on it, put it in the mail, and send it to him every Friday or every other Friday. And every Monday, this guy would get $10 without explanation. Drove him crazy.